Listeners, thank you for joining me for episode 90 of the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. And before I introduce today's guest, quick reminder about 7-Minute Science. 7-Minute Science is happening on January 22nd, 2024. My birthday, by the way. Shout out, happy birthday to me. And it's going to be at noon central. It is every firefighter's favorite price, free, or like I like to say, free 99. And even if you can't join us, I don't know, you got to walk your dog, you got to wash your hair, you have to do something like that at noon central on my birthday, just register and you'll get a recording. You're going to be sad that you missed out live, but just register, you'll get a recording. The link to register is in the show notes. Here's the coolest part. It's going to be 7 of the top researchers doing health and wellness research on firefighters. And they've all promised me they're going to be super entertaining, no tiny charts and graphs. And the best part, they're going to give you the so what, now what? Like, what do I do with this information they just told me? You're going to walk away with the so what, now what? So again, get registered. Don't be lame. Come party with me on my birthday. Today, I got the huge honor of sitting down with South Metro Fire Chief Bob Baker. And we had such a wonderful conversation. You're gonna love it. But Chief Baker takes such good care of his people. And because he takes good care of his people, they take good care of the citizens. His people are force multipliers. Chief Baker has over 40 years in the fire service, and he has had one amazing career. So stick around, listen to the episode, and oh, by the way, if you didn't hear parts 1, 2, 3, you're going to want to go back and check those out. Welcome to the show, Bob Baker. Thank you for joining me on the Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, AZ. I find the research and resources and then provide the fire service with the so what, now what, to ensure the health and well-being of every member of our profession. Together, let's thrive. Hello again, Fire Rescue Wellness Podcast listeners. I'm going to be honest, I'm pretty pumped for this conversation today. My guest today is Chief Bob Baker from South Metro Fire. And if you've been listening to the series, you already heard from Chris Macklin and Kelsey Bailey and Tommy Gayfield. And now we get to talk to the Chief. Chief Baker, please say hello to my listeners.
Hello, everyone. Thanks a lot for having me, Annette.
I mean, I'm just honored you're taking the time out. You're a busy man, and I'm really, really happy that you took the time. I appreciate that. I always kind of want to give my guests some context, and the reason I even met Chief Baker was he and his department hosted a wonderful Women's Leadership Summit last May, and thanks to my friend from the Chicagoland area and current employee of South Metro Fire, Lauren, I got invited to speak. So that's how I met the chief and some of the human performance staff and Connor. Can we just give a shout out to Connor?
Oh yeah. Woohoo. Connor is just absolutely amazing.
Connor is the PIO and she's just, she's incredible. Like the lady has so many plates spinning at the same time and nothing ever gets dropped. It's incredible. Thank you, Connor, for helping with sound.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Connor.
Well, Chief Baker, I always start the podcast instead of saying, please tell the listeners about yourself. I ask 3 hot light bulb interview questions. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. First one should be easy. Who is Bob Baker?
Well, that should be easy, shouldn't it?
It should.
Yes, it should. So I am a second generation firefighter. I'm originally from Flint, Michigan. My wife and I moved out to Colorado. I think it's kind of a cool story. So she was interested in moving out away from Flint. Go figure. It's a great place to be from, but not to be there right now. And she was interested in snow skiing and had been to Colorado once or twice with her family. And so we started dating, and about a month after we started dating, she said she was thinking about moving out to Colorado. She had a best friend that was out here, and I thought, oh gosh, not without me. So it was soon thereafter I asked her to marry me after only a few months, and we literally packed everything that we owned into a little Oldsmobile Starfire and drove out west from really to Colorado, where the only person we knew was her good friend from high school, and then a family that she had not corresponded with or spent any time with in probably maybe 10 years that her parents knew, and I knew no one. And so that's our story of moving out to Colorado. My dad was a firefighter and an engineer with the Flint Fire Department back in Michigan, and so that's a little bit about me. I grew up in my grandparents from my mother's side both immigrated from Sicily in the 1920s. And had an arranged marriage and moved to Chicago, interestingly enough. So we have something in common. My mom went to Alvernia All Girls High School in the south, on the south side of Chicago, and then married my dad, and then they moved eventually to Flint, Michigan. So that's a little bit about me.
I'm blown away. First of all, that's a wonderful love story. And my battalion chief, since he has been my lieutenant, so I've worked for him for years, said, "When you know, you know."
Yep.
And when you don't know, you still know.
You still know, yeah.
You still know. So that's such a great story. The other thing is I'm getting ready to retire and pack up my whole life, and I kind of wish it fit in a tiny car too. This is going to be a pain.
Yeah. Yes. Back then we just didn't have much. I think we started a joint checking account after we'd been only going out for a couple of months, and I think we saved up maybe $1,500 to our name, and my mom saved some things, some furniture and stuff that we had moved out to Colorado after about 2 years. But really, we camped all the way out to Colorado. We went to California to visit my grandparents, and that's how we lived for at least a year. We were cooking on a camp stove in our apartment in North Glen, Colorado.
So you've been married 40 years?
We got married in 1982, so 41 years. This will be our 42nd.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
That oh, thank you.
It's a wonderful, wonderful story.
Yeah.
So the next question, what sets your soul on fire?
Oh boy. Well, if you use the word soul, then my mind immediately goes to my Christian faith, which is the foundation really for my leadership and for being or at least working and aspiring to be a good dad and husband and now 7 grandkids and an 8th one on the way. My faith is so important to me. It forms a foundation for who I am. I'm sure that you talk to a lot of people that say serving other people, you know, is what they love to do. And it really is. It may sound trite, but I don't think it is at all. My dad once told me, you know, you're never going to get rich working in the fire department or in public service, but you'll always sleep well at night. And at the end of your life, you'll feel like you've really accomplished something meaningful and in the service of others. And I find that so rewarding. I end up getting more out of that relationship than I feel like I ever give. Leading an organization like South Metro, where we've got more than 800 people, is a real challenge, but it's also a real joy. And I feel like there's so much there in helping our people to be the best that they can be and realize their potential. And you know, they're taking care of a community of 565,000 people. And so for me, I feel like I get to do that through them. And that's provides an awful lot of joy and self-actualization, I guess, is the best way I'd describe it.
Well, and I won't go down this rabbit hole yet, but I just have to state the obvious. You know, you have dedicated your career to service to others, but most people would think the community. And you do serve the community, but I think you have served your personnel so well and taken such good care of them. And I'm excited to talk about all that. But let's get to our third question.
I love talking about our people. That's easy.
Oh, gosh, they're so great. How are you changing the world?
Oh, that would be really easy. It's through them. But not only through them, but I would say when I think about legacy leadership, I think about my three children. I think about my seven grandchildren. I think that's our best opportunity to change the world. You know, when we're gone, is the investments that we make in not only our family, but the fire service is really my family too. So most of the people that are really close to us are people that we've known in the fire department for 30, 35 years. And so it's what's really neat is to be able to impact other people through them. So it's like a force multiplier, right? I mean, when you're a leader, if you're trying to do everything by yourself, you're really impacting only what you can touch and what you can work on and interact with as a single individual. But if you're helping people realize their potential, then in some small way, I feel like I'm impacting people through 815 employees, and then through my family too. So, so I would say I'm changing the world through other people. A little bit in some ways myself too, but I'd say the greater impact is through other people.
And I think that force multiplication goes outside. So it goes through your personnel out into your community, but now it's spilling out into the bigger fire service community mm-hmm. as a whole. Chris was telling me about all the presentations at Science to the Station. Did you get to go?
Oh, I did. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't have missed that.
Gosh, yeah. I didn't go, and I'm so sad.
Oh, it was so good. Well, we had pretty much our whole wellness team that was there, and we handed out a couple of awards to folks on our wellness team. Tommy Gayfield was one of them, and Chris Scheckler, and just having that fellowship and being with them away from the fire department, but still, in your community, was really cool. And it was so neat to see firsthand that that many of the things that we're doing at South Metro and championing at South Metro are being embraced outside of our organization and modeled. And it's really neat to be in a lot of ways leading the way as best we can. And so that was really cool. And I was down there with a couple of people that outside of the fire department, outside of our fire department, Mary's the fire chief in Mesa, and I just love her. And so I got to spend some time with her and her husband too. And that was wonderful.
So, and all of those people that were at the conference again, got to see what you're doing and think about it, model it. I'm just so excited for what you're doing. So now I want to dig in, because Chris told me that, I believe what he said in 2018, he came off the line as kind of the first person, but you had been the chief since 2014. So how did this, what was kind of the timeline? You became chief of this large organization, and then what?
Yeah. If I can I go back a little bit?
Of course.
Because I think that story is fascinating, and it's really unusual in the fire service. So when I hired on at Parker Fire Protection District, which is one of the parent organizations to now what is now South Metro, it was 1984, and most of what we protected was agricultural property. And we had a very, very small commercial base. And most of it was residential, and it was a real small fire department. I was in the first 15 people that hired on. I think we had maybe 20 total employees in 1984. And through a series of consolidations, there's like seven of them ultimately, but the first big one was Parker and South Metro in 2008. And at the time, our fire chief, I'd worked for a wonderful man, Dan Qualman, and I'd worked for him for more than 20 years. And he was our fire chief from 2008 all the way through 2014 with the new merged South Metro. And then I became the fire chief in 2014. So this next year will be my 10th year as the fire chief. But what's unusual is to go from a small fire department, really protecting a rural community, to now a metro-sized fire department that's serving a community of over a half a million people, and the challenge for me has been staying relevant through all of that. So that kind of growth over a period of 40 years is unusual in the fire service. You know, there's a lot of communities, especially some in the Midwest, and they're relatively the same fire department they were, you know, 30 or 40 years ago. And so that's been unusual. Chris, the impetus for Chris to come offline, I think he shared with you that he got injured. So it was a curse and a blessing at the same time. But what had happened was prior to me taking over as fire chief, when I was still the operations chief for South Metro, we were running an IPAT test. And we had three individuals that had cardiac events within a very short amount of time. And one of them, a rather young man that competed in the Combat Challenge internationally and was ranked like in the top 10 or 15 people internationally, and then suffered a catastrophic event back at his fire station after running what for him was a really easy IPAT test. And he ended up really probably shouldn't have survived the event. So he went into cardiac arrest. He was in and out of cardiac arrest over a dozen times, shocked, I think, 17 different times. And we reevaluated our IPAT test and went to a VO2 max METS test. And when we went to that, one of the things that we made sure we did was provide what was the beginning of a very robust fitness and wellness support mechanism, which now falls under what we call human performance and optimization. And that was our commitment to the men and women in our fire department in asking them to perform an annual test that that is difficult and also is mandatory. And that's unusual, you know, in the fire service. If you follow the WFI, most fire departments, while they might mandate it, you don't have to pass it, and we're unusual in that way. And so, there's the skin in the game for our men and women at South Metro to be supported with almost $2 million every year of wellness support is to maintain their fitness levels and take the initiative to make sure that they, you know, they stay in physically, mentally, emotionally fit to do the job. That's a big ask to have them do that annually, especially when fire departments all around them don't make that a requirement. And so our in-kind contribution to that is to making sure that they have everything that they need to be successful and to retire when they retire, they retire healthy and not broken. And we do really everything that we can do to make sure that we provide that safety net and support mechanism. And Chris was the first person to come offline in a day position. And he he and I partnered with one another. He at the time was on the union's e-board, executive board, and shepherding that program from where it was to where it is now. He gets the lion's share of the credit for that. He and Vince Garcia, who's now the head athletic trainer for the Denver Broncos, he and Vince started the program, and now Chris is still there and still expanding on it.
Chief, one of the things that I think individually with health and wellness, as well as within an agency, people are sometimes not super inclined to take radical action until something big happens. So for example, I go for my yearly physical and oh my gosh, I have a heart condition. I take radical action. I change my nutrition, my sleep, everything. And your agency, you know, had those three cardiac events. So you kind of started putting pieces together. What can we do? But how do we talk to the other agencies out there and kind of sing the message of this stuff is really important, even if you haven't had an event yet?
Yeah, that's a great question. So fire departments, you know, they're typically reactive.
Yes.
Right? It's like a big whack-a-mole game. Actually, that's what we're trained to do, is we're trained to identify a situation, bad situations, whether they're medical or a special operation situation or fire, trained to identify what is the biggest risk and then mitigate it and quickly. And so we're brought up in that environment, and the proactive environment, isn't one that we lean into often. And firefighters too, most firefighters' idea of long-range planning is trying to decide what meal they're going to have next. And so they don't look out across the horizon all that much. Now, that is the job of executive teams and fire chiefs is to be more proactive. And I would say we were looking at fitness and wellness before we had those fairly catastrophic events. But here's how in the dark most fire agencies are. So in Colorado, we had those three events and we turned them into workers' comp, obviously, right? Because they were all running an iPad test while they were on duty. And the workers' comp law in the state of Colorado said that for cardiac events, unless you were performing some function that was unusual to your normal job duties, where you would not normally be expected to do it, you weren't covered.
Wow.
Well, and if you think about the fire service, what's unusual?
Right. Nothing.
If you go to a call and you're like, wow, that was really unusual, usually that's a bad thing, right? So all of those workers' comp claims were denied, and when we talked with other fire chiefs, nobody had ever explored that. Nobody had ever had an issue, a cardiac issue that occurred that didn't result in a sudden death. So we didn't have a cardiac issue where somebody was still alive in order to turn in a workers' comp claim. So nobody had explored this, 20-year-old statute that was basically intended for every other work environment other than fire or law enforcement, because that was the majority of the people that were covered under workers' comp. So if you're a principal in a high school and had a cardiac event, you weren't going to be covered, just like you're not covered if you're a firefighter because you weren't conducting or performing any task unusual to the profession. So that was the impetus for several trusts that we now have in Colorado that protect our people for cancer, cardiac, and mental health initiatives. But even prior to those three cardiac events, we had been looking at what we could do to have wellness support. But I would never have envisioned it getting to where it is today. I don't want it to make it sound like, well, I had this grand vision with Chris Macklin to create what we did today. But now what we're doing, I feel like we've transitioned from the reactive to the proactive. And one of the things that I'm trying to do is convince other fire chiefs to see the value in that and the wisdom in that, and that the more that we can take care of our people to make sure that they're working and healthy and contributing, that benefit is just huge. And what a lot of times I'm sure fire chiefs and city managers, mayors, city council want to see is the ROI, right? What's the return on investment? And some of it's so difficult to quantify. When Chris was on here, and I don't want to go over the same ground that he covered with you, but we found a lot of ways that we're able to identify it. But some of it just is, it's like when you try to identify how much property did your fire department save from fire in a year. Well, you've got to extrapolate out what you think might have happened had you not been there. And that's a pretty good metaphor, I think, for fitness and wellness is, what would have happened had we not tested you? So one of our newest initiatives is cardiac CT scans. We've identified two people that likely in a time frame of somewhere between 3 months and maybe a couple of years would have had a significant cardiac event with LAD blockages of up to 90%. So what did we avert? Well, so either a death or a significant enough cardiac event that someone would have been out for probably a year, maybe never come back to work. I mean, what's that worth? And making that case for people that are in charge of funding that type of an initiative, I'm happy to do that. And you'd love it if people really connected the dots right away. But sometimes until there's some sort of major event, they're not really wanting to do that. And it sounds a little depressing, but I feel like in my last, I've only got a little bit of time remaining as a fire chief. And that's now my mission is to try to share what we're doing and how it makes a difference proactively as opposed to reactively. You know, anybody can react to something and come up with something to fix it. But that's not the job. I don't think that's not the majority job of people that are in chief officer positions in the fire services to identify where that risk is beforehand and keep the event from happening in the first place.
Well, you definitely got my chief's attention with the cardiac CT scans. He's not a regular listener, but when Chris was having his episode, I'm like, my chief needs to hear this. Mm-hmm. And that really, really got his attention. So you're making a difference, little chunk by little chunk. So from my side of the table, it's easy for me to say, come on, throw $50,000 at a part-time athletic trainer or whatever it might be. It's real easy because I can say, even in a company like Johnson & Johnson with a very basic health and wellness program, they get 3-to-1 return on investment. And even if you don't get 3-to-1, maybe you only get 1-to-1, it's the right thing to do. It's easy for me to say that because I'm sitting on the table. I'm not holding the checkbook and I don't have to answer to anyone. So how do we have those conversations with the people that do hold the checkbooks and control the budgets? And how do we do that?
I think some of it is being able to communicate and to show the positive impacts of proactive measures like having maybe an on-staff person that deals with nutrition, or one that deals with mental health, or three athletic trainers that teach your recruit academy. So we've got a couple of recruit academies every year, and they're embedded with those recruit academies. And so we're testing folks before they start recruit academy and when they finish recruit academy, and the results are, they're amazing. Some of it is our responsibility to do a better job of identifying the positive return on investment as opposed to just throwing money at things. And so we have a huge responsibility to do that. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to champion, or not trying to, I'm championing along with Chris and other people at South Metro is for this, for example, cardiac CT scans, we're going to put several hundred people through that next year. And we'll partner with higher education, and we'll do a study on that, peer-reviewed study that we can publish and that we can share with people, so that our folks aren't the only ones that are benefiting from it. So some of it is that. You mentioned something that I think it's really compelling for me. Is sometimes it's just the right thing to do. So when you really take a look at a fire department's budget and some of the things that we will spend money on. Maybe we'll buy a new aerial truck at $1.5 million. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing or that we shouldn't be keeping equipment up and current. But oftentimes we'll throw dollars at things and not people.
Yes.
And the things only are a vehicle for the people. And for me, it's been easy. It's easy. Isn't maybe not the right word because it hasn't been easy sometimes to shepherd some of this stuff. But I mentioned I was a second generation firefighter. Well, my son Robert is a captain on our fire department at our dive station at Station 31. He's married, has a little 2-year-old who's just wonderful, and they're expecting their second child. And so for me, it's personal. I want to make sure that my son goes home.
I use this analogy. I speak a lot at conferences, not necessarily related to the fire service, mm-hmm. but I speak about tactical topics. So fire strength and conditioning or something like that. And I always use the analogy that we just bought a ladder truck too, but it was $1.8 million. And to replace it 18 months later, it's like 2.2. Prices went up.
Yep.
But we have a very specific maintenance schedule, daily checks, weekly checks, quarterly, new tires. Like we spend money, like you said, throwing money at things. But we do that because we want to make sure that we get our lifespan out of that ladder truck. But I raise my hand and say, but when I add together my salary and my benefits for the last 20 years, it well exceeds the price of that ladder truck. And I'm going to argue and say I'm an appreciating investment because to some extent I'm getting smarter and better and more clever and able to train people, while that ladder truck is unfortunately depreciating. So why do we treat those two investments so differently? And how could I change that argument to make it more compelling to fire chiefs?
Yeah, that's really a great point and a great way to look at it. What I would say is that I believe, and I know an awful lot of fire chiefs in metro-sized fire departments, and they care. They care about their people. They are trying to do the right thing. They're also under a lot of pressure. And what sometimes seems so easy, you know, is not that easy to shepherd. And so, I think some of the help is again to identify where we're making gains and we're showing a return on investment and sharing it, right? So sometimes we're not real good at sharing stuff, you know, among our cohort. So some of it is sharing that. Some of it is taking the time to document it. Some of it is just having the conversation. Some of it's encouraging fellow fire chiefs to like attend the symposium that was just in Tucson, right? So listen to people firsthand talk about the differences that they're making in their firefighters' lives and fitness and wellness and professional development. So it's a little bit of all of that that I think helps. You boiled it down into a really simple equation, right? Is that our people are our most valuable asset. We want to hire the right ones, to get the right ones on the bus. We want to promote the right ones. And then when they're working for us, the thing that is so moving for me is what I expect them to do every day. So if you just sit and think about what we're asking our people to do, it's routine. It happens every day, but I think we lose sight of the gravity of it. We're asking them to, you know, throw themselves into harm's way. And whether that's physically or mentally, you know, how much of this can you absorb over 25 years watching people on their worst day? In COVID, it was, you know, show up not having any idea how this pandemic might actually impact you and you take it home to your families. Like we had people that were staying in hotel rooms for weeks because their spouses said, don't come home. And we've got little ones, or I've got a elderly parent staying with us, and we don't know yet what's going to happen, you know, what you might be bringing with you. That's just such a profound ask of our men and women. So it seems like to me that that in recognition of that, we ought to be doing everything possible to make sure that, you know, we talk a lot at South Metro about having a round trip ticket. So you show up in the morning, you have a round trip ticket. It's not one way. So it seems like we could do better at recognizing what we're asking our people to do. And then as leaders in our organizations, going out on a limb sometimes and championing what we need to make sure that they're taken care of and that they're as safe as they can be. And that, to the degree that we can, that they get to go home at the end of their shift and at the end of a career without being broken and living in a trailer park, you know, somewhere, because they can't make ends meet. So, I know that sounds awful fuzzy, but I think it's just really simple.
No, it actually is so profoundly clear. I think that too many times we just say, this is what you signed up for. You raised your right hand. Everything else is your job. But putting it in your perspective, really looking at what we're asking these people to do on a daily basis, that was very clear to me, Chief. Very clear. So I have two rabbit holes that I want to go down.
Sure.
The biggest argument that the pushback I get, and my chief was just having conversation with me in the hall, and he's like, that sounds like a great program that they have, but you know, we have 87 employees, mm-hmm. not 850. And I said, But Chief, they have 11 people in their HPO team right now. Could we have one? Because we're a tenth of their size. Could we have one? Mm-hmm. Or could we have these MABUS divisions in Illinois where yep. certain departments, you know, could we get one person for our MABUS division? Could we start there? What do you think about just do it? What do you think about that, Bob?
Oh, sure. No, I think partnering with other departments, if it is for smaller departments to share a resource, I think that's a great idea. You have to... I think Chris said in his, because I listened to his interview, at was it A Journey of 1,000 Miles or something like that? Start begins with one step, right?
Yes.
There's so many little axioms like that, like best time to plant a tree was 25 years ago and the next best time's right now. We started with one person. We started with someone on modified duty that we brought into the office in order to begin and seed what we could see was going to be necessary in the future. I would say I would encourage folks to take that step and have somebody that is, you know, that's their primary focus is the health, fitness, and wellness of it's everybody's. Seemingly everybody's focus, or it should be in the fire department, should have a piece of that. Just like if you just say on the fire ground, everybody's a safety officer, but you don't actually have somebody that is one, and everybody kind of is seemingly picking up those duties, it doesn't work very well. So I would say to fire chiefs out there, take the step. I don't think you can go wrong there. Now, I would caution folks to just plucking a person offline that maybe is hurt and say, hey, guess what? You know, you head up our fitness and wellness division. It was a huge blessing to have somebody that had really a passion and a heart for that, like a Chris Macklin, that you could ask to do that. And so you've got to identify somebody that has a drive for doing that and a heart for it. And then it's not a one and done. So I didn't just say, hey, Chris, you know, why don't you come offline and work 40 hours a week? And by the way, let me know how this program's going after a year. He and I were in very close proximity for, and still are, with regard to how things are going with our initiatives that we have in place. And I think that's a piece. I think it's like every fire chief I talk to wants to set aside time to visit with their crews. And so, and that holds true for fire chiefs of a 20-person fire department all the way up to a 2,000-person fire department. The fire chiefs I know, like Mary Camelli, who I mentioned earlier, who are managing and leading in a larger organization, they just do it, right? I do it. So I'll visit every single firehouse in a period of time and talk with our men and women. And if I can do that with having 30 fire stations on 3 different shifts, I know that other people can make time for that. There's a really great little book one of my pastors gave me years ago that's called The Tyranny of the Urgent. And what it is it's a cautionary tale for people and you know, in my case for fire chiefs, to not get bogged down with the urgent when the important is what you should be focused on. And I think that's so easy for fire chiefs to do. And part of it is because I think we're designed that way from most of us from birth, but certainly from training, right? So we talked about it earlier. We're a reactive bunch. So you're trained as a company officer to identify, or a paramedic, identify a situation, evaluate it, take more than about 20 seconds and it's too long, and then employ a strategy to mitigate it. And so for 25 years, we learned that is what makes us successful. And then you get to be a fire chief and you sit at your desk and you wait for the next emergency so that you can put out the metaphorical fire that you have. When an executive skill set that's necessary in a fire chief position is almost exactly the opposite of that. It's prevention, right? It's how do I keep this bad thing from happening? And until we rewire ourselves that way, with that mindset, I think that we're going to struggle. And so so anticipating what the next fire is going to be is really the art of that of leading. And I would say don't pluck a person, put them in a position, and then say, I did what I did. You know, I can check the box off, right? You have to live it and live it along with the people that are, you know, that are you're putting in position to take care of other people. So my job is to make sure that I'm taking care of our men and women like family, so they can take care of our citizens like family. It's just that it is that elegantly simple. And in order to do that for fitness and wellness, you have to be engaged in that. You can't just check the box.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I've often said that if I ever, God forbid, need CPR, I hope there's only one person standing around and not an entire crowd, because that one person's more likely to act.
Absolutely.
And I think that's exactly that, the analogies, you know, everyone's a safety officer, everyone's in charge of fitness. Oh, you've got a lot of good ones.
Oh yeah. Yes, we do. I have one other thing I just feel kind of compelled to share with you.
Absolutely.
So we've had unfortunately multiple line of duty deaths, you know, here at South Metro. And so you asked me initially, you know, what was the second question you asked about,
what sets your soul on fire,
right? So, over the last 5 or 6 years, we lost our most senior person ever in the fire department, Mike Freeman, we called Free, who one day was an engineer on a tower and literally a few months later died of a glioblastoma multiforme job-related cancer. And then not long after that, we lost multiple other people in our organization. Troy Jackson, who was our operations chief and a very dear friend of mine, died from job-related cancer. Another very good friend of mine who had recently retired as a captain took his own life. And we had just recently another young man, relatively young man, that left behind a wife and two girls and died of job-related cancer. So we've had cardiac cancer and then also a building collapse in 1989. But for four of those people, actually five, I ended up delivering a good part of their eulogy. And that is just something that you just don't want to do as a fire chief. And so I wouldn't recommend that being a motivating factor, having names on a line of duty death wall. But I will say for me that, that's part of it, right? Is that you just don't want to go through that experience again or have a family have to go through that experience again. So, if you need a motivation as a fire chief, and if you have a line of duty death wall, and God, I hope you don't, but spend some time at it every week, and just remember the people that you know that you don't have anymore. And if you don't have a wall, go to the. What I would suggest is your state has a line of duty death memorial. They have one in Emmitsburg. They have one in Colorado Springs for IAFF members. If you're trying to figure out what you're going to commit to in this next year in 2024, I would say have that be one of your New Year's commitments, right? Is take a visit to Emmitsburg, take a visit to Colorado Springs or in your own state and look and watch and observe those events and the families that are there and man, use that as some inspiration for what you can do to make a difference so that you don't ever have to do that as a visiting, you're doing it as a visiting fire chief instead of a participating fire chief.
That's really, really, that's really insightful. And I think that if we keep in mind our people, if that's the first thing in our mind, I think that we take better care of them. Sometimes I think the people go a little bit to the wayside, but everybody's, the chiefs and the deputy chiefs they're busy and everyone's understaffed. So I do understand how that happens. So we have to keep those people in the forefront of our mind. So I wanted to ask you a question. So in 2018, when Chris went into his position, and then he shared with me that his first or your first hire was an athletic trainer. Mm-hmm. How did you decide the pace at which you would crank out new employees into positions in HPO? Was it super logical to you, or was there a lot of teeth gnashing and trying to figure out what the right thing to do is?
I'd say the latter. I'd like to say that I was, you know, that any one of us is prescient and kind of figured it all out ahead of time. It was, a lot of it was organic. Some of it was based on recommendations and feedback from, at the time, Vince Garcia and Chris, as to what they saw the biggest need was. Mm-hmm. I would say that with every new hire, what I don't want to do is give the impression like I just have a bag of money and every time somebody asks for something, I threw one of the wads of cash at it. It's, you know, it's not that at all. It's every time we added an FTE. So here's the thing: when you add an FTE in staff, if you're a fire chief, is I don't want to hire people. When you hire people, you hire their families, right? You're providing a position for them that they're counting on, and typically when times are tough in a fire department, you know what gets cut? Generally, it isn't line staff or line personnel. It's staff. And so we're really careful at South Metro. If we're going to hire somebody on a 40-hour work week in a staff position, I want to make sure that they stay employed and that that whatever they're doing has efficacy and that the next year I'm not saying, hey, you know, it was a great year, but you and your family need to find another way, you know, to survive. So we're thoughtful about those hires and we want to make sure that they're really adding value to what we're trying to do. And we're pretty strategic and, you know, when we hire them. So the thought of let's just hire them, see how they do, and if it doesn't work out, let them go, that's not our model. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm sure that your staff appreciates that very much. So I wanted to ask you one more question before we sort of get to your closing thoughts. I've been talking to you as the fire chief, but let me now talk to you as Bob, the blue shirt line personnel at a fire department where Bob knows we've got to get something started here. And he just doesn't know what to do, how to speak to the chief, where to even start. Can you give us any perspective from that side of the table?
Boy, you didn't say they'd be easy questions. So
no, I know. I asked the tough one. Sorry.
Yeah, this is one that we're actually, interestingly enough, we're wrestling with this as an organization, and that's the sort of barrier that seems to be there. That is either filters or stops information flow. From the people that are actually performing the job up to the people that can make the decisions that can positively impact them. So it's one of the disadvantages to a larger organization. You know, there's my perspective on that is that a couple of things have to happen for you to be able to at wearing a blue shirt as a firefighter, engineer, or a company officer, right? I feel like a company officer, that's the make or break position in the fire department. That's where culture is created and indoctrinated and supported. At that level, one, the organization has to systemically support feedback from that most important level where citizens are actually being cared for up to the decision-making level. And so if your organization doesn't have that, like you don't have a venue to be able to speak to that, it's going to be really difficult for you to be able to initiate a change. So I would say you have to have an organization that's open to that. And even I feel like ours is, and we still struggle with that. Mm-hmm. What I will say is that the most important part I feel like in leadership, especially at a fire chief level, is to be present with your people. And that oftentimes is how I get a perspective around what's really needed and necessary. Because when you get to be at an upper level of the organization, the unfortunate thing is people tell you oftentimes things you want to hear. And that's really a downside. The people that are precious are those that will tell you the truth. especially if they'll tell you the truth respectfully. But yes, I would please. Rather, yes, I would rather take, tell me the truth disrespectfully than tell me what I want to hear. So I believe the question you're asking is how do people wearing a blue shirt get their ideas up? And I would say the bigger question is, how as a leader do you make sure that you have an open conduit for those individuals? The responsibility is not on a company officer or a firefighter to be able to move the information up. The responsibility is for leaders to understand that if they're making decisions that don't have the input of the people that are actually performing the work, then they're wrongheaded. And you have to make space for that. And I'm not saying we're great at it. I'm saying we're working at it, and we acknowledge that that's the issue. There are several things that I would recommend if someone was going to come to me with an idea, and that would be have it be well thought through. Take the time to invest in other people that have expertise in it, so that you're not just, you know, throwing something against the wall and hoping it sticks. Be willing to help shepherd it. So it's frustrating to have people say, fix this for me. And oh, by the way, I'm not interested in helping. So
I want a solution. I will not be part of it.
Part of it. Yes. Yeah. I don't want my fingerprints on it because somebody might blame me for it. if you're a fire chief, take none of the accolades for things well done and take all of the responsibility when they go bad. And then you'll create a culture where people don't mind failing forward and they don't mind making mistakes because they know they won't be ostracized for them. And so that's important too. A lot of that is, I believe, the responsibility of the leader. Now, as a follower or a direct report, I would say it's your responsibility when you see things that aren't right or that need to, that could be better. You have to sometimes step out on a limb and put yourself out there. And be willing to, what's interesting to me is our men and women will do that day in and day out. They'll put themselves at extreme risk on a fire ground or an EMS call, but they're reluctant to raise their hand against peer pressure and say, hey, I think we could do this better. So you have to have courage and fortitude to be able to suggest something different. And then I would say have the persistence. If you really believe it's the right thing to do, then it's not a one and done. Keep pushing till it happens, especially if it's something that's of consequence. If it was easy, somebody else would have done it.
One of the pieces of advice I give the people that are asking or wanting is find out what you actually need. Mm-hmm. And then don't ask for less, because sometimes I think they ask for less just hoping they'll get something. But when you get less, sometimes it doesn't solve the problem. Poke holes in that idea. Do you think that's good advice?
No, I think that's wonderful advice, right? If you're going to take a chance to do something, then make sure that it's going to have the benefit or the result that you intend. Yeah. Yeah. I would say there's a corollary to that too, that if the desired outcome is, best in class or whatever you'd like to call it, gold standard, platinum standard, the other thing that I think is important, this just popped into my head is that it's good to have an appreciation that oftentimes individuals that are in a position to make the final decision have all sorts of constraints that you probably haven't anticipated. So just having a appreciation for that, like if you're going to go talk with a deputy chief or division chief or your fire chief about something, just the recognition that it's not as easy as it looks like from the outside will help. And that sometimes if you want to get to that desired outcome, it's going to happen iteratively in stages. It can't just happen all at once. And you have to almost have a proof of concept as you go along, like, okay, the other thing that's good is report back on progress, right? So we did this and it's not exactly what we wanted or it didn't have exactly the outcome we thought, but here's the really positive things that are resulting from that. The other piece of it would be brutally honest about the things that aren't working. Don't just share the successes, share the things that aren't working. And then, you know, you'll develop a relationship of trust, which is, you know, critical to anything happening that's new.
And listeners, if you haven't listened to parts 1, 2, and 3, you need to go back and listen. But one of the points that Chris made was you started, was it with a $32,000 AFG grant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Humbly with that. Yeah. Yes.
So you have to start somewhere, even if you're trying to shoot for the gold standard. That's really good advice. So I always, at this point in the podcast, I give you, this is a choose your own adventure.
Oh, great.
Okay. First adventure, was there a rabbit hole that we should have gone down that I didn't ask you about? So that's choice one. Choice mm-hmm. two is, do you have any parting words for words of advice? Now, just so you know, Tommy Gayfield had a fit and said he couldn't choose. And so we did both. So you can technically do both.
Oh,
too.
Tommy. He's an overachiever.
He's like, oh, I have to decide.
Oh.
He was wonderful.
I feel like if I'm following Tommy Gayfield, I mean, he's a hard act to follow anyway. I feel like I'm right where I should be. Can I pick A and B just like Tommy did?
Of course. And just so you know, Chief, there is a small intermission because Tommy released this week and then there's the New Year podcast and then there's a dietitian. So there's a little intermission. So you don't technically have to follow right after him, which I know is a relief.
Yeah. Thank God. Yeah. Cause he's just amazing. He's like, you mentioned Connor and, that she's just a bowl full of energy and positivity. And that's how I would really describe Tommy too. He's a person. If you're feeling it all down, you just want to be in the same room as he is in. Yeah.
I wanted to jump through the screen. Also, he or his wife and I will now be best friends too.
Oh, nice.
He said she's wonderful. So
yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
You can go on both paths now, Chief. The mic is yours.
Oh, nice. So, let's see where we didn't go. I think we kind of worked all the way around it, but my parting thoughts aren't so much a rabbit hole as the positive things that we're able to do. I believe any fire department can do them too. They just have to have the right heart and some perseverance and pull on the people that are already there that also have that same, you know, that same heart and desire for others. So it's built into them and taking care of everybody else in the community. So it's just a simple step just to change that focus from everybody else in the community to the people that are taking care of everybody else. And that's your own fire department community. And I would say any level of success that we've had at South Metro, or certainly that I've had as the fire chief, have been the direct result of picking the right people and having them just trying to remove the barriers for them so that they can do their job and just grow, you know, in the role that they're in. And so I would say I'm just use the opportunity to be incredibly grateful and thankful for the men and women that have supported both me and the organization through the years and have made both of us look fantastic because certainly couldn't do that on my own.
And just to reiterate, keep the conduit open.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Bob, this has been I love this conversation. I think it was so good. I know my listeners are going to get so much out of it. I appreciate your time very much. And I think we can officially drop the mic and say Chief Bob Baker and AZ are officially out.